The hour of 10:15, having arrived, we'll call the House Tax Committee to order when we have a quorum. We're very fortunate today to have with us Dr. Paul Wilson and Mr. Eric Ouellette from the Department of Revenue. We will start out with Mr. Wilson. Mr. Wilson, I will interrupt you when we have a quorum so we can officially call the meeting to order. Now, we'll let Mr. Wilson get to the table here. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, Paul Wilson, Director of Tax Research at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the Tax Committee, sir. Okay, this is the annual tax expenditure report. So how would you prefer, do you have it break it up in sections and then have members ask questions, or do you want to go through the whole report, or what's best for you?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a strong preference. There are a couple of places we could break if you wanted to take questions at that point.
Okay, why don't we do that? So it's still fresh in our mind here. Okay. Please state your name and who you represent for the record. Or did you already do that?
I did that.
Oh, man.
I can do it again.
Man, do it. No, you don't have to do it again. That's fine. Okay, so if you could please proceed, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's glad to be here to talk about the tax expenditure budget. I discovered when I was preparing for today that 2 years ago when the study came out, I did not present it either. No presentation was made in either the House or the Senate. So we're glad to be here this year to present. Tax expenditure budget is a legislatively mandated report. This is the 15th Minnesota tax expenditure budget. I actually have a copy of the very first one here. Looks like this. The pages are a little yellow, but it goes back to 1985. It looks very much, very similar, actually, to what we do still today. So there are about 30 years worth of data through all these years on tax expenditure budgets. It's due on February 1st of every even-numbered year. We do this in alternate years. The tax incidence study is done in the budget years, and the tax expenditure budget is done in the non-budget years. And it's a major project. It includes estimates for 311 separate items this time. We have 12 analysts, maybe a few more in property taxes, if I get them included as well. We have two full-time interns for both for the summer and the fall. It's led by Carolyn Carlson and Randy Sanford. Carolyn has been working on this and keeping the report, protecting its integrity and keeping the quality high for many years on this study. I must admit, I don't do much of the work directly, so I'm reporting on the work of others, certainly in this case. And most work is done in the summer and the fall of 2015. I want to start by just talking about tax expenditures as a concept. Where does that term come from? Why do we use that term? If I mention tax expenditure to somebody who is not in the tax area, they'd look at you with this glazed look because the term is such a strange term of art. Then I'll look at an example from the study, to show what's in the study on individual item. And then I want to talk about the use of the tax expenditure budget by different people in different ways. There's a budgeting perspective, a tax reform perspective, and a revenue options perspective that I'll run through sort of three different ways people can look at or use this information. Tax expenditure as a concept.
Excuse me, Dr. Wilson, we do have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Simonson moves the minutes of April 6th. Any additions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Simonson. Dr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the tax expenditure as a concept, if you consider the income tax, if the only goal were to raise revenue, then it would be best to have a broad income tax base and low rates. So the mantra is broad base, low rates for taxes as being sort of an ideal structure. But of course, that is not our only goal in our tax system. That's not the only goal. So if we want to encourage homeownership, then we put in a mortgage interest deduction. If we want to recognize or reward combat veterans, we put in a combat credit. If we want to help farmers pay for bovine TB testing, and that's a little dated now, but we put in a bovine TB credit, help pay for child care, we put a child care credit. If you want to increase business startups, we have an angel investment credit. So there are a lot of provisions in the tax law that are put in for specific purposes. And you could design a direct expenditure program to meet each of those goals. Now, it may not work as well, it may work better, but the idea is that to some extent, a lot of tax provisions are similar to expenditures. The idea of a tax expenditure is that tax expenditures and direct expenditures are alternative means to achieve policy goals. And policymakers, the argument is, should make a conscious choice between a direct expenditure or a tax expenditure, and subject tax expenditures to the same scrutiny and overview that we give to direct expenditures in the budget process. Now, tax expenditures are different than direct expenditures in quite a few ways. First of all, there's no line in the budget documents. The only place you'll see the numbers for tax expenditures is in the tax expenditure budget. So if you look in there, there's no line in the budget. So we have a line in the budget for the property tax refund, but we do not have a line in the budget for the mortgage interest deduction or the deduction for real estate taxes. So there's no line in the budget to look for. There's no regular review process in most cases, and there's generally no limit on the growth over time. Tax expenditures tend to be on autopilot. They're authorized by different committees. So the mortgage interest deduction is in the tax committee, but housing programs will be in a different committee. And so where the tax expenditures and direct expenditures are dealt with in different committees. And because tax information is generally private, there's more limited public access to program information with tax expenditures in many cases. There's also a major political difference. A tax expenditure cuts taxes, and a direct expenditure increases government spending. So while there may be alternative ways to do things, politically, cutting taxes is more popular than increasing expenditures for people. So the choice of which one to use often is based upon the difference in the political difference in that way. Tax expenditure is meant to be a neutral term. Okay, it could be tax expenditures may be wonderful, or they may be awful, but there's no pejorative sense to the term tax expenditure. At least it was never intended to be. It was intended to be a neutral term. Tax loophole, of course, is not a neutral term. So if we call this tax loophole report, we would probably be making judgments. Tax relief is simply always good, at least it sounds like it. And so tax expenditure is designed to get at this idea of bringing these provisions into the budget process, but is meant to be a non-pejorative way to talk about them. There's sometimes charges of sort of tax benefits, sort of an idea of liberals, because they're usually presented as ways to raise revenue. But the best example of the use of tax expenditure budget that I know of was in the Reagan income tax reform of 1987. Similar state tax reforms have often used budget their tax expenditures budget for this way as well. In addition, the fair tax and other flat tax proposals often talk about broadening the base dramatically to drop rates, and they're again basing some of that on the ability to get rid of tax expenditures. The whole idea of tax expenditures there as well. And I have a quote here from Martin Feldstein, a conservative economist, saying that cutting tax expenditures is really the best way to reduce government spending. His idea, I think, is that tax expenditures are, to some extent, government spending themselves. So, again, I think the idea here is that tax expenditure is designed to be a non-pejorative way to talk about using the tax system for purposes other than just raising revenue. At the federal level, tax expenditure budgets focus on the income income and corporate tax and on the estate tax. We have taxes at the state level that the federal government doesn't. So we include a lot of different taxes in here. You'll see. This is just a simple count by item. The counts are sort of meaningless, but you can tell that the individual income and corporate tax are large, the sales tax and property tax. So that's where the emphasis is, and that's what I'll be talking about today. I will be having Eric Ouellette is here to talk about the property tax, any questions on property tax, and he has a few slides later on the property tax items directly. So what is included in the tax incident study in terms of an item? If we look at one item, home mortgage interest is one that's understood, so it's a good one to talk about. It's item 1.69 of the report on page 62 of the report. There's no real need to turn to that page, but that's where you'd find this. And each of these items begins with a legal citation at the top. So where can you find this tax provision that creates this tax expenditure? And that's followed by a description of current law. In this case, it describes the limits on the itemized deduction for interest paid on debt secured by a principal or second residence. So some description, a brief description of what the provision does. That's followed by some history. When did this start? How was it changed in recent years? And when we can, it includes the number of people or businesses affected at the bottom. And finally, at the very bottom, we have the dollar impact. So that the mortgage interest deduction, the impact on the income tax revenues, if you repealed this, the impact of this is about $240 million in fiscal year 2017. I should just add, though, that while we show in the book, we show the dollar increases, you could also look at this as a tax, as how much could you reduce the income tax rate if you, in fact, repealed the mortgage interest deduction. And in tax year 2016, each 0.1% change in all four tax rates, the 5.35, 7.05, 7.85, and 9.85 rates, a 0.1 percentage point change in all four has a $151 million impact. So one way of looking at that is that if you look at this home mortgage interest, if you didn't have it, you could drop the tax rate in each bracket by 0.15 percentage points. So the cost, in some sense, this is a tax expenditure, the impact of it is either $240 million of foregone revenue, or it is an increase in the tax rates, 5.15%. And either way is particularly more correct or less correct to look at it. People have asked, well, why don't you show the percent change in tax then in the report? I think that's a good suggestion. It is difficult to do for income tax because someone will say, well, I don't want to drop every rate by a tenth of a percent. I want to drop them proportionally, or I want to drop the second rate more than the first. And so it still would be possible to do that and actually show it in this way instead of just the dollars. And I think that's partly why it might help get rid of some of the feeling that this is that there's some bias in the way the report is designed. Mr. Chair, if you want to, if there are questions, this is the place. I'll then talk about different uses of the report.
Okay, thank you, Doctor. Questions for members? So far, Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Wilson, do our neighboring states use the same concept of tax expenditure?
Doctor?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I should have looked at all the states that have tax expenditure budgets, but I believe that most of the surrounding states have them. It's a very common thing to do at the state level to have reports. Some of them are called different names, so there are a few states that will call them tax, whether it's tax relief or something different, but the concept is generally there for most of the states. It started at the federal level. I think there's like 30 states, 35 states maybe that now have studies like this.
Thank you.
Chair Erickson.
Thank you.
No, Vice Chair Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So a comment about the term tax expenditure. It's I guess it was created to be a neutral term. When I got into office here, I was confused by that term because in my background, accounting degree, finance, to some extent, analysis, research, it seems odd. And so because it separates the original source of the revenue from the decision to reduce the amount that source would be providing going forward. So my question for you, if the state zero-based budget or use zero-based budgeting, would that eliminate, appropriately in my opinion, the term tax expenditure? Because it would just start over and you would say, how much do we need this year? And it really wouldn't be an expenditure. It would be a more right-sizing or decision-making process of how much revenue is needed to fund the important expenses of the state.
Dr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barrett, I think as long as you have a tax, like an income tax that has a lot of provisions in it that are not just aimed at raising revenue, I think you still would have tax expenditures. I mean, if you started from zero every time and you asked each time, should we have this tax expenditure, should we define it that way, you'd be reviewing the tax expenditures the same way you review other expenditures, and that would certainly meet That would sort of be the, what, anyone who likes tax expenditures, that would be the best thing, would be to review all of them equally rather than focusing on the expenditure side rather than the tax side.
Vice Chair Barrett.
Sure. Just to follow up to that, I guess, I'm looking at it, of course, from a private sector perspective, working for a company that does many things, including publishes books and curricula and videos and other things to sell. You know, we look at the revenue that comes in and the expenses, and if the revenue, if the expenses are higher, then we'd either reduce those expenses or increase revenue, which is what I think the state would do. We wouldn't consider that revenue to be an expense at all, because it's actually providing the resources to fund the needs. But I think we would if it became a deficit. You know, and I think maybe I'm thinking of one example. I think the earned income tax credit would be one in which, you know, it's a refundable credit. So I think that would be an expense, because that actually the net effect of it is to remove resources from the state to those that might need it. Can you just give me your thoughts on that description? Or I realize the private sector does things differently, but sometimes they're better than what the state does.
Dr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barrett, the irony is that some states don't include the refundable credits as tax expenditures because they are considered direct, more like a direct expenditure. But I mean, people often try to make that distinction. If it's less than zero, then it's got to be then it's an expenditure. But the whole notion of a tax expenditure is not that it's less than zero; it's that you are defining a tax base. I mean, if you were a business and you were out and you were making money from different products, you might decide to change your pricing on different products in response to marketing as well. So you don't only say, "Well, what's the revenue? I got to adjust to it." You also do things to change your revenue. Revenue stream and to go in different areas. So I don't think businesses don't look at the revenue side other than just simply taking it. And I mean, you know that. But I mean, so I'm sure it's not much of that kind of. But the basic idea here is you've got direct expenditures, and you could do the same thing pretty much through the tax code. I mean, think about some of the ones that are listed. I mean, take a real simple one that I don't think is really relevant anymore, the bovine TV credit. That could have been done as a direct expenditure by the Ag Department. Instead, it was done as a tax credit. Department of Revenue's influence in that was pretty small, because it wasn't what we do. We just, someone sent us something saying they had paid this money, and we gave them a credit. It didn't depend on income. It didn't depend on anything else. And so it looks just like a direct expenditure to me. And that's the idea, is which way would be better to do that? If you look at that, are there advantages? Why was the tax system chosen to do that? Why was the Department of Revenue put in charge of that rather than the Ag Department? Those are the kind of questions I think that the tax expenditure idea. The only other thing is that we have tax expenditures and direct expenditures. We have a child care credit in the state of Minnesota aimed at low-income families, and we have a direct expenditure on basic sliding fee for child care. And the programs are not very well integrated. And so thinking about it as a tax expenditure says one thing you want to do is integrate these programs together so that they work better. And if you don't think of the tax expenditure as an expenditure, if you don't look at it that way, you never ask the question, well, how are these things really integrated? How can we do, what's the best strategy for child care and assisting with child care expenses? So I know I haven't satisfied you with my answer, but it's just, I think there's some feel about tax budget that I think is done because of how people have used it in the past. More so than the concept itself. So if you think of people just going through and plucking ideas out of the tax expenditure budget and saying, well, here's a way to raise revenue, if that's the only way it were used, then I could see that it really is sort of a different animal. But that's not the only way to use the tax expenditure budget.
Vice Chair Barrett.
I have a question, Dr. Wilson. On page 3, slide 6, it says tax expenditure, tax loophole, tax relief. Could you give me an example of a tax loophole? I have great interest in that.
A tax loophole is just a tax expenditure you don't like, Mr. Chair.
But I like all loopholes.
Oh, you like all of them.
Yeah.
So then they don't exist. Then the term is meaningless.
Okay. I've always wondered about that term, because if it's legal, but it's called a loophole. Yeah, if we don't like it, it's called a loophole. Why is it called a loophole if it's legal? If it's legal, can it be a loophole?
Mr. Chair, this is why we don't use the term in our report. So.
We'll talk about that later. Dr. Wilson, any other questions for Dr. Wilson at this point? Dr. Wilson, please proceed.
Okay, I want to proceed by just talking about three different ways people can look at the tax expenditure budget. I'm sort of looking at it from a user perspective. What could you do with it? What do people tend to do with it? What's the usefulness of it? The first is a budget perspective, comparing the effectiveness, where the goal is to compare the effectiveness of direct expenditures and tax expenditures that have a similar purpose. The second perspective is a tax reform perspective. Basically, how low can we go? How much could we reduce tax rates if we repealed or modified some tax expenditures? In other words, looking at it as a base broadening rate reduction kind of a using it for that purpose. And third perspective is basically the revenue menu, looking for ways to raise revenue without raising rates. And I want to talk about each of those in turn. From a budget perspective, the idea is you want to facilitate review of tax expenditures, and the basic point to be made here is if you're interested in the budget perspective, the tax expenditure budget is just the starting point. It doesn't help you much, but it is a starting point. So I call your attention to a study done a few years ago mandated by the legislature called the Tax Expenditure Review Report, published in 2011. The subtitle was Bringing Tax Expenditures into the Budget Process. And they looked at how to take the tax expenditure budget we now have and try to use these ideas to bring this into the budget process. The report was written by five local economists as consultants, including our current state economist, Laura Columbikidis, and from across the political spectrum. So some of you know John Spry. He was on this, Professor Spry from St. Thomas. He was on the group as well. So across the political spectrum, to look at how we could deal with the idea of tax expenditures and use them for budgeting purposes. They proposed that, like some other states, that we have an ongoing review of all tax expenditures over an eight-year cycle, administered by a special tax expenditure review commission, and that each expenditure should be evaluated by asking what's the goal, for the tax expenditure to be redesigned to achieve the goal in a more cost-effective and transparent way. Could a direct expenditure program achieve the goal in a more cost-effective and could a direct expenditure do it in a more cost-effective and transparent way? Should the existing direct expenditure program with similar goals be better integrated with the tax expenditure? That was the child care credit example. And should the tax expenditure be expanded, modified, or repealed? Now, this is not our report. This is not the time to talk about the report, but this is sort of what some people would like to do with the tax expenditure budget. There's so much further. It's a starting point. To get into the budget process, you really want to set up some kind of review process, get it into the budget documents directly rather than sitting over on the side in the off-budget year, which is an oddity all of itself. Our tax expenditure budget, you saw what we do with each of them. We have no evaluation of tax expenditures in our report at all. We don't say whether they're good or bad or a loophole. Okay, there's just nothing in there to evaluate them. What a report does is to describe them and then to estimate what the budgetary impact is, and that's all. There is a report, though, that some of you, I'm sure, are familiar with, put out by House Research Department here, November 2013, a review of selected tax expenditures, and in this report, this report evaluated 25 income tax and 19 sales tax items, and for each item, there's a discussion of what the objective is. They talk about related spending programs. They give evidence of the distribution of benefits, basic information from us on how the benefits are distributed by income, where that's possible, and they talk about the effectiveness in meeting the objective that is stated by reviewing at least the literature, empirical literature. So, again, this is an example of an evaluation. Those who want to bring tax expenditures into the budget process really are looking at going well beyond the tax expenditure budget. The first step doesn't get us very far. So from that perspective, we are really doing just a baby step here. We haven't gone beyond that. From a tax reform perspective, so the second perspective is basically how low can we go kind of thing. I want to urge some caution here because there's a tendency for people to add up all the tax expenditures and say, wow, we could broaden the base that much and we could drop the rate way down. And I want to give some cautions, both on the income tax side and the sales tax side, about doing that with the tax expenditure budget. There are three cautions I want on the income and corporate tax side, three cautions about doing that. The first is that some of the, if you repealed some of the listed tax expenditures in the report, you would significantly increase complexity. We usually think about simplifying the tax system by getting rid of special provisions. But if you get rid of these provisions, you're going to make life much more difficult if Minnesota does it alone. Particularly because Minnesota piggybacks on many federal tax provisions of the income tax that affect the timing of taxes. You put money into an IRA and you don't pay tax then, and then when you take it out, you pay tax later. That's, if you don't do that, if we differ from the feds, you've got to keep separate books on the IRAs all the way through, one for state tax purposes, one for federal tax purposes. Accelerated depreciation is similar, deferred compensation, pensions. All of these are examples where we include these in our tax expenditure budget, and if the federal government took action on some of them, it would be easy for us to go along. But to do it alone is extremely difficult. And so those really shouldn't be, if you look at it, at broadening the base and lowering the rate, you really don't want to include those dollars because if you include those dollars, you're going to look like you can do much more than you really can. The second point is that in some cases, we list things in there that wouldn't cause timing problems, wouldn't cause you to keep two sets of books, but it might be really hard for people to comply with them and for us to get compliance. If an item is not taxed federally, and it's not reported in the federal tax return, and it's not subject to federal reporting requirements like a 1099, then the taxpayer may not have any clue what the number should be, and certainly we won't have a number, have much of a clue what the number should be. So if we started taxing some employee fringe benefits, for example, that the federal government doesn't tax, and they don't put it on the W-2 because they don't tax it, so it doesn't show up there, and there's no 1099 for it because the federal government doesn't care, it's not taxable, then we will have a hard time getting information on that. Now, you face this in a lot of other different areas, too. A lot of proposals you have, we run into informational problems. But I want to point that out because we don't leave things out of the study just because there would be an informational problem. The decision is to put them in there because they really are a reduction in revenue from not having that in the tax base. But you don't want to count that, and you really want to be careful in dealing with those kinds of examples. And the third, on the income taxes, the third thing to be aware of is that there are interactions among proposals, among items. So repealing multiple itemized deductions is going to raise less than the sum of the estimates. So if you just add up the itemized deductions, you get $729 million of cost to Minnesota from allowing itemized deductions on the income tax return. That's a big number, $729. But if you actually repealed them all at the same time, you'd only get $516 by our models. A third of the money goes away. And why does it go away? Because if you get rid of the first itemized deduction, say mortgage interest, then people have already become, they've sort of effectively standard deduction people. They're down to the standard deduction. And then when you get rid of the charitable contributions one, well, they're no longer going to benefit from it. But if you got rid of the charitable contributions one first, they would. So each of the estimates is assuming only that one thing changes. If you change multiple things, you can get less revenue coming in from them combined. And this is the strongest example and the one that you really have to be aware of. I think a few years ago we had a bill to modify some itemized deductions. The numbers came in much lower than were expected because people had looked at some items in the tax expenditure budget. So with those three conditions, what can we say about broadening the base and lowering the rate for the individual income tax? Slide here shows, the first thing to look at is the number in red. The number in red, this is in millions, although it doesn't say that. This is in millions, so this is $6 billion. There, if you add up the tax expenditures and adjust for the itemized deduction interaction, there's about $6 billion of tax expenditures in the income tax area. Just adding up all the numbers in the tax expenditure budget for income tax, individual income tax. If you look at the number in blue at the bottom, we collect, in fiscal year 17, we expect to collect $11 billion in revenue. So it looks like the tax expenditures in the book are 54% of collection. So the tax expenditure numbers are 54% as much. That suggests if you got rid of them all, you could expand the tax base by 54%, and that would let you lower the tax rate considerably. The problem is, as we said, those that would pose few or no administrative problems, not timing and not information problems, is only 14% of collections. The bulk of these are federal items that we would have an awful time conforming to, going alone on. And so to add these up gives you a very misleading picture. Instead of being able to reduce the tax rates by a third, you can reduce them by roughly 12-13% if you did this. You could go from 5.35% down to 4.7, the 7.05 down to, you could do all these proportional reductions is what I'm looking at here. And reduce them all proportionally, but that's how far you would get if you did every item in there. This is why when we began doing income tax reform work for when Governor Dayton was elected, we looked at a lot of options. It's really hard to find an easy way to reduce tax rates much by broadening the base in the income tax area, despite what it looks like in the tax expenditure budget. So the bottom line basically is, even if you did a lot, it's not nearly as much as it looks like. The report can be misleading, I guess, is the main point. And this, of course, with the little bit you're doing here, the quote little bit, it's actually a lot, because you'd be taxing all Social Security benefits, you'd be getting rid of the work and family credit, you'd be getting rid of the angel credit, you'd be getting rid of all itemized deductions. In other words, those are the kind of things that are in here. So you've got very, very, the base broadening and lowering the rate is very tough here. If we look at the corporate tax, it's a little different. There's about almost $1 billion of tax expenditures if you add them up. That's 79% of collections in fiscal year 17. Collections, by the way, bounce around a lot from year to year, so it's a little problem doing it this way, but let me proceed anyway. 56% of the amount that the state could change without running into big problems with timing issues or with informational problems from the feds, 56% of collections. That could get the rate down from 9.8% to 6.3% if you actually did all that. So much more possibility there, but I would say that much of the money comes from getting rid of single sales apportionment, which I gather from neither party is particularly enthusiastic about. So broadening the base in this case includes the tax measure numbers, include some things that would be difficult. The R&D credit is also a fairly large part of the base broadening in this case. Sales tax.
Dr. Wilson, I think we'll take a little break there. Is that a good spot?
Yep, sure.
Before we hit sales tax. Okay, Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Wilson, for your presentation. A few slides back, you kind of hit a nerve when you were talking about depreciation schedules. Those of us that have to keep them have to keep two. My question is, does anyone else analyze the effect on the taxpayer as far as the additional costs that we as taxpayers have to incur in order to keep these extra sets of records?
Dr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson. Certainly that is considered in, you are the tax committee, so you certainly can consider that when you make decisions. I mean, the two places where we don't go along with federal tax now, I believe, are bonus depreciation and Section 179 expensing. The bonus depreciation is actually, and in neither case, I mean, if you think about bonus depreciation, that is done in a way to keep you from having to keep two sets of books. The adjustment is fairly simple in that case. I know you don't like it, but it's not the complexity introduced by the bonus depreciation fix. If we didn't go along with the bonus depreciation at all, and we just said we're going to make you do your old tax, we're going to make you do it, depreciate under our old rules without bonus depreciation, that you would have to keep two sets of books. But the bonus depreciation fix, in some sense, gets rid of that to a large extent. Now, Section 179 is a lot tougher because there the calculations that you have to go through are much more complicated. But those are the two places we don't go. I think in every other area, I'm looking at Joel to see if I, in all every other area, we actually do conform to federal rules now. In the early 1980s, the state disconnected from the ACRS or the Senator President Reagan's changes in depreciation. We disconnected, and it took us a long time to unravel that when we later on to sort of get back to where we had been. So there have been examples where we haven't, but those are the only two examples right now.
Chair Charles.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My comment is that once we start down a path like this where we separate from federal guidelines, it's very difficult to get back in track because it becomes expensive as we go through time. But it is a hardship for some of us. not a life-ending hardship, but it is, it's extra bookkeeping, it's extra, an extra step in the decision-making process as those of us that consider capital investments just try to decide how it's going to affect us on our tax forms. So thank you for that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. Point well taken. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Wilson, for most individuals to take advantage of these, they have to itemize, not exclusively. But I forget and wondered if you could remind us again what percentage of individuals or households itemize versus those that use the standard deduction.
Dr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, I believe it's in the low 40% to itemize deductions federally. I think the problem is that because the state law requires you to add back your state income tax, quite a few, not a whole bunch, but some who itemize federally also, they basically, once that add back, they get down to the standard deduction. And so in some sense, there's, we still call them itemizers, but they're not getting any state tax benefit from itemized deductions. So that would bring the numbers down a bit below that. I can get you the percentages, but I don't recall.
Thank you. I just think it's important to remember that for majority of our constituents, they're not at a point economically where these things come into play. They're important for a lot of other people, but it's a mixed experience. Thank you.
Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Dr. Wilson. Thank you for your presentation so far. My question is about, you know, we talk about these 311 expenditures, and, you know, clearly a portion of them are tied to federal conformity. But do you have a sense off the top of your head about how many of the 311 are somewhat or somehow tied to federal conformity?
Dr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simonson, the tax expenditure budget is organized in a way that you can actually go through and find that easily. I could look through and look at the counts, but in the income tax, it starts with federal exclusions, and then has a section on federal deductions, and those are all tied to the feds. And after you get through that section into the Minnesota-specific ones, then you're no longer in those. So for each tax, you could identify. It's really only the income tax and the corporate tax. But in each case, you could look at the numbers that are not that are tied to federal law. Now, we don't always match federal law perfectly, so some of them are in there, and we still differ a little bit from federal law. But I think that's fairly easy to identify in the way the report is organized.
Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One follow-up, and if this slide is coming or if this answer is later on in your presentation, feel free to wait. But do you have and I could look in the book, I guess, myself and find it. But do you have a total for, say, 2016 or 2017 of what the value of the 311 expenditures is?
Dr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simonson, I have not brought that total. I have a total for the corporate, the individual, and the sales tax in here. But again, they can be added together, but you run into some of these problems with adding together. We discourage adding all the numbers together because of interactions in general. So we don't show. I actually think there is online there is a place online you can go, and if you go to the tax expenditure budget on our website, you can click on there's a table that you can click on right below that. It's an Excel table that lists them all, and I think it actually does show a total at the bottom for all of them. So I guess we do have it out there, and I've been criticized for having it there. So the total by people inside the department. But so you could add them all. I think you are all added up in that situation. But that doesn't take the interactions into account at all. It doesn't take the interactions into account for itemized deductions, for example. So it's giving you an overstatement of the total.
Representative Simons.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, I can go and do the math myself too. And I agree that you have to consider the interactions, which essentially changes the bottom line. But I want to say that a couple of years ago when we talked about, perhaps the inclusion of some sunsets or the inclusion of some trigger dates in law that would require reviews of some of these expenditures, I want to say that the amount that the state of Minnesota was spending on tax expenditures was in the neighborhood of $11 billion. Now, give or take a billion or two, but it's a significant number, is it not, Mr. Wilson?
Dr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, Simon said we have, you know, if there's $6 billion for individual income tax and another billion, that's seven plus for sales tax. You've got 13 already with just those three tax types. So, so certainly more than 11.
Representative Simon,
thanks.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. Questions up to this point? Otherwise, we'll... Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Wilson, there's been no evaluation of tax expenditures, and this is probably a project that would be too large or extensive for the Office of Legislative Auditor, but who would be capable of doing an evaluation of the tax expenditures? I mean, what would that take?
Dr. Wilson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, that was something that the Expenditure Review Commission spent a lot of time talking about, and the members that were working on that, and in the report they talk about it. I mean, trying to do all of them at once is impossible. Doing them over 8 years, I think, would be a challenge. They had the evaluation being done by an independent commission. There's a little danger doing them within the Department of Revenue. My example always is that when we had Governor Plenty, if somebody wanted us to evaluate Job Z, it might have been a difficult thing to do within the department. So I think politically it's advantageous to have some independence, but obviously the Department of Revenue would have to be doing a lot of the staffing and work. So there was a request. I think the Tax Expenditure Review Commission asked for a considerable amount of money as an appropriation for the process. And the idea was to do them so every 8 years everything would be evaluated. There are some states that do this. They generally do it with independent commission of some sort. They're not necessarily done well. Iowa has a very different approach. They do more like what we did here with the Angel Investment Credit, where they do intense evaluation of a few, and that was a mandated evaluation that was put in law. So that's a very different way to approach them, where you just pick some instead of doing all of them. But I do think that for the work that House Research did on this was very good, and so they picked the ones that were not so much business items, because they were doing individual income tax, sales tax, and they chose mostly consumer sales tax items. So those items are in some ways easier to evaluate, easier to look at than some of the business ones where you have which are much more difficult to evaluate.
Sure.
We do not have staff trained in evaluation. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. That's part of the problem, is that the staff that does revenue estimating is not necessarily skills for that are not necessarily the same as the skills for evaluation. So that's another reason to have additional staff needed.
Chair.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Michael, you must have been involved in the review that was done in 13. To what extent do you get into the evaluative side? Because I've not read it, but I will be sure that I do.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, essentially what we did was to try as best as we could to identify what the objective is for the tax expenditure, either based on, you know, what we recalled from the legislative process or what was sort of generally conventional wisdom. In terms of evaluation, what we did was try to synthesize as much as possible from peer-reviewed literature and government reports that have evaluated those tax expenditures, and then sort of just provide a summary of that. I think the sort of thing that the commission was envisioning would have been a much more intensive and comprehensive analysis, where they would do actual research on an analysis of those provisions. That's a much bigger enterprise. So largely what we were trying to do was to summarize what academics and government researchers, usually at the federal level, had done on those tax expenditures.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dr. Wilson, and I should probably know this, I don't though, what's the makeup of the Tax Expenditure Review Commission? How many members are there? Who appoints them? Are there any legislators?
Um, I I don't recall either. I know it was, I think it was being appointed by members by the House and members by the Senate and maybe something by the governor as well.
You just make sure I'm never appointed to that. I'll be watching for that appointment. Okay, any other questions for Dr. Wilson at this point? Otherwise, we'll go into on page 9, tax reform perspective, sales taxes. Dr. Wilson.
Okay, in the sales tax, again, you can add them all up and look at how much the base would increase. You still have some different problems. These are different problems. There's no federal sales tax. We don't have to worry about federal timing issues or anything. Any informational problems that are out there are going to be not because it's not data reported by Fed. So this is, sales tax is completely different, but there are some cautions, two cautions for you to give in using the tax expenditure report this way. The first of them is that for our purposes, tax expenditures include any non-taxable as defined and has been defined since 1985 to include any non-taxable sale of tangible personal property or services to the final user. Now, to the final user means we're not including a lot of intermediate purchases by businesses if they're exempted, so that, for example, the use of materials in manufacturing or the purchase for resale are not considered tax expenditures because they're not being sold to the final purchaser, final user. But capital equipment is being sold to the final user, so we actually include the capital equipment, the exemption of capital equipment, telecom equipment, etc. That is included as tax expenditures. It's important to point that out, that we got some in here that are that way. Business services also are being purchased by business almost by definition. So when businesses hire accountants to work for them, that's the sale of a business, purchase of a business service, and business services are considered to be purchased by a final user. And so we do include in our selective services a lot of business services as well and the cost of those. A lot of people who look at the sales tax, particularly economists of the sales tax, think of it as a consumption tax. I mean, it's a tax on consumption, isn't it? But, of course, we know it really isn't a tax on consumption because it includes some business purchases as well. If you're looking at expanding the tax base to drop the rate, then you've got to pay attention to whether your expansion is business purchases or whether you're focusing on consumers. So that's the first thing, and the next slide we'll talk about the numbers a little bit. The tax expenditure budget also, on the other direction, does not include some consumer services. So if you actually look at the report and you say what's missing is medical services, educational services, housing services like rent, and construction services. Now, they're left out for various reasons. I don't know that we can justify why certain ones are chosen to be left out. It's more of an historical anomaly. But just realize that some things aren't in there. So if you were to do something like the fair tax, which is a much broader tax base, a lot of these things would be in there in the base as well, even though they're not, we don't have them as tax expenditures in the reported. So if you look at the sales tax, there are about $6.8 billion of tax expenditures reported in the report, the red number on that page, $6.8 billion of tax expenditures. We only collect $5.7 billion of revenue. Now, this is the number, this is sales tax at the 6.875% rate. So actually I've taken out things that don't depend upon the rate, so we can talk about a rate reduction here. So it won't match exactly what's in, but this is how much comes in just the sales tax at just the 6.875% rate. So I don't have the added amount for alcohol in there, for example. But if you look at that, that's 119% of collections. So we have tax expenditures larger than actual tax collections. If we broaden the base, we could cut the rate by more than half if you did it that way. We just brought everything in. So it looks like you could cut the rate in half. But if you look at just the consumer portions, it's 57% of collections. And so you're really talking about going from 6.875 if you broaden it to all the consumer items that are in there. Now, I'm not including the services that aren't listed. You could drop the rate to about 4.4%. Again, this is taxing clothing, and it's taxing food, and it's taxing consumer services and haircuts, and it's taxing a lot of things that would be difficult to broaden the base to. But that's, if you want to think about lower rate and broader base, that's those are probably the numbers you'd be looking at looking at. So adding these up, in other words, is you got to be careful in the sales tax area what you add up. Now, you could say you want to tax purchases by government and purchases by nonprofits as well. But business purchases are a big part of this. And again, if you broaden the business purchases, you can get the rate down a lot further. But be aware that's why it's coming down, is because you're broadening it to business you're not broadening a consumption tax, you're broadening a sales tax, which includes other revenue. The last thing I want to talk about just briefly is using the tax expenditure budget as a menu of alternatives. Okay, if you're looking, if you need a little more money, let's look at the tax expenditure budget and find an item that costs about the right amount, that raises about the right amount. And now this is how a lot of people think the tax expenditure budget is used. So I'll let those in the tax committee decide if this is really how it's used. But there are some things to be aware of. Tax expenditure budget estimates are not revenue estimates. They're not the same thing. They have different types of assumptions. And so be very careful. Don't expect the revenue estimate for something to be the same number as in the tax expenditure budget for a number of reasons. First of all, the tax expenditure budgets, tax expenditure estimates don't include interactions among provisions. They ignore any impact on other taxes. So if you change the motor vehicle registration tax rate, that's deductible as an income tax itemized deduction, so you have some interaction there. They don't adjust for effective dates, which is really critical. A lot of the items that are timing items, there's almost no relationship between the revenue estimate and what's in here, because this assumes you've always had this, numbers we have assume you've always had this thing taxed. And if you start taxing it, you're going to get a very different effect in the early years than if it's always been taxable. So sort of an ongoing estimate as opposed to a change in law estimate. You all know that if you change a sales tax item, you only get 11 months in the first year of collections if you change it July 1st. And you all know that if you change an income tax item, you may get more than one tax year total in the first fiscal year. So timing, all the effective dates issues are just ignored in these numbers. And finally, they're updated only every 2 years, which means they're out of date fairly quickly. So they become old numbers in a hurry. The final thing, if you're looking through a menu of items, if anybody wants to do that, and I'm not saying anyone does, but if you do that, remember administrative complexity. Don't assume that because something is in there, it's really possible to do it. And I actually do have a information I can provide you that actually where I've identified each item as either being a timing item or an item with informational problems or in the sales tax, divided them between the different business versus government, et cetera, that I can make available to people if they have interest. But the big, most scary thing about the tax expense budget was someone goes in and finds something and say, well, let's do this, and you say, I don't think we can do that. And you say, well, why is it in there then? So, at this point, I turn over to Eric Willett to talk a little bit about property taxes. Okay.
Before we do that, any other questions for Dr. Wilson on the last part of his presentation? Okay, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Eric Willett with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. The property tax portion of the tax expenditure budget is a little bit different than the rest of the report for a couple of reasons. If you were to eliminate a tax expenditure in the sales tax or the income tax, that would increase the tax burden for the individuals who benefit from it, but it would have no impact on other income taxpayers who don't take advantage of that tax expenditure. With the property tax, though, most of the provisions in the property tax that confer special benefit have the effects of shifting taxes away from benefiting properties onto other properties within the same jurisdictions. So the tax expenditures that for the property tax within the report don't show savings or cost to the state, but they show dollars shifting among how many dollars shift away from the benefiting properties if that tax expenditure is eliminated. So it's more focused on tax shifts. Now, there are provisions in the property tax system where there are no shifts, the credits where the state is paying a portion of a taxpayer's dollar, but those types of provisions are in the do kind of follow the regular budgeting process, and they do show up on the books for the state as expenditures, so those are not included in the tax expenditure report. The two largest types of tax expenditures within the property tax system are our classification system and the exemptions. And I'll talk about each of those just a little bit briefly. Starting with the classification system.
Next slide.
Yeah, next slide. So this table, the classification system is discussed on pages 186 to 187. Basically, the classification system determines how levies are spread among the various types of property. And we really have three different tax bases within the property tax system. most property taxes are spread on what's called net tax capacity, and there are rates that determine how those levies are spread between different types of property, generally giving the most advantage to agricultural land and secondarily to homestead land at the expense of business property. There's some levies, about 10% of taxes are spread on what's called referendum market value, which is closely mirrors just what the market value of the property is. And then the third one is the state general property tax, which is paid only by business and seasonal recreational property. So what this table shows is if you took all the property tax levies in the state and you simply spread them on market value, on taxable market value, who pays the tax change? And that's what you see in the table in the PowerPoint that shows a lot of shifting onto homestead and farm property and away from business property if we had a simple market value system for all the levies. Now, this assumes that no change in levy behavior. This assumes that local governments would levy exactly the same number of dollars even if the tax base was significantly different. That's probably not an accurate assumption, but it illustrates the impact of the classification system on the different types of property. Finally, a slide that isn't in your packet because we just added it this morning, but it is in your report on page about 190. I'm not exactly sure where. But this shows the impact of exempting property from the property tax. Now, importantly, there are some types of property that are exempt under the Minnesota Constitution or federal law, and those are not shown in the tax expenditure budget because statutory changes, you don't have the authority under statute, page 185. Thanks, Paul. There isn't the authority to take this exemption away by changing statute. It would require either a constitutional change at the state level or a change in federal law or federal constitution. So the ones shown in the report are the ones where state statute has conferred exemption. And the largest categories are public property, that is like property owned by the state and local governments and used for public purposes. And then the smaller categories are hospitals and charitable institutions. There are, and they total about $40 billion of value. As compared to taxable market value statewide, which is about almost $600 billion of value. Now, those there's also the exemptions I mentioned that are exempt by the Constitution or federal law, and those are about the same amount of value as the statutory ones, about $45 billion of value. And the largest categories there are schools, colleges, universities, and church and burial grounds. There's a third category of exempt lands that are pilt lands, and there's over almost 8 million acres of tax-exempt land in the state that is covered by our payment in lieu of tax property. These are also not in the tax expenditure budget because the state does provide a benefit that is part of the state budgeting process for those lands. So if they were taxable as opposed to being paid for pilt, the tax expenditure would be almost $200 million. So that's an overview of the property tax provisions. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them.
Questions for Mr. Ouellette? Okay, with that, I want to thank Dr. Wilson and Mr. Ouellette for your presentation.
Dr.
Wilson.
Just make one comment. The last two slides are, made a couple comments here about when things are in the tax expenditure budget or not, and it just describes our rules for deciding whether something really is a tax expenditure. And you've heard some examples where Eric Ouellette said certain things aren't in for certain reasons. I would just make one comment. The Super Bowl tickets exemption has shown up in the budget. In the tax expenditure budget for the first time, because it's always been zero before, and we don't put items that are zero in the report. But exactly how these are selected is important, and I can talk about them, but they're written out here, so I don't.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Ouellette or Dr. Wilson? We want to thank you very much. Very, very good presentation. With that, is there anything else for the good of the order? If not, please be looking for emails for the agenda for Tuesday. And some members have been getting back to me with items that are important to them, and please feel free to do that. Stop by, have a cup of coffee, or talk to me on the House floor, and we'll see where we're at. So, for that, good government all the time. We are adjourned.